broadcasting from the heartland of America.
In the Hoosier Media Network studios.
The next generation in conservative talk radio. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. What's up? Welcome to it. Hour number two, the Voice of Reason. I'm Andy Hoosier. So great to have you with us. Broadcasting out of the heart of the nation in Wichita, Kansas, on our flagship here at the Hoosier Media Network studios. We are all over the country, multiple radio stations and TV and live streaming and podcasting. However you watch us or listen to us, it is so wonderful to have you with us. Your Millennial General reporting back for duty as we do every single weekend for your weekend edition here of the show. You can find us online, HoosierReason.com, H-O-O-S-E-R Reason.com. You can click the live tab. You can listen to us live there. You can watch us live. You can leave the comment in the chat room there on the website. You can check out our latest blogs. You can check out all the affiliate stations that we have. And if we have one near you, and if we don't have one near you, let us know where you're listening from and we'll reach out and try and get an affiliate near you so you can listen to us every single weekend in right there on your radio waves. Coming up on the program, MK Sweeney. We've chatted with her, not on this program before, but I've chatted with her during my weekday show before. She is the author of the latest book, The Magi of Merriam. We're going to go there. We're going to go down the road. Gender theology. What does that even mean? I don't know what that even means. But now that we're out of the Easter holiday shenanigans, where apparently that was the time that we get to talk about the Transgender Visibility Day, as opposed to, I don't know, like the holiest holiday of the entire year for a third of the world's population, for the most part, that we celebrate, I don't know, Easter Sunday. But apparently now transgenderism gets to have a holiday outside of Pride Month, and then like 50 other times throughout the year as well. And Transgender Visibility Day landed last Sunday on Easter Sunday at the same time. And obviously, you can see all the conversation that had throughout that week. So we're going to talk about what's happening with the focus on children, the younger generation, the minors in this nation, and why we're seeing this push for gender confusion with this gender theology being rammed down our throats. We'll have that conversation coming up here in just a little bit. That's what we do here on this program.
We'll do it live.
And we're going to have fun doing it each and every weekend as well. Speaking of, on the campaign trail, we need to talk about some issues. There's a lot to get to, so let's get right into what's happening this weekend and beyond.
It's your week in review.
For sure. This weekend is a big one for the campaigns on both the Trump and Biden side of things right now. And right now, it's all about gathering that money, 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 as you know, which is really what it's all about. And I've said this many times on the show before. There are two things that make you successful in politics. That is a lot of money and a good PR team. Outside of that, you can be whatever, and as long as you have a good PR team and a lot of money, doesn't really matter. Now, you have to have character as well, but the PR team can help spin that a little bit, but you still have to have character. That's why someone like, I'm just going to throw a name out there, Mike Pompeo. I'm from Kansas. That's where my flagship is here at the Hoosier Media Studios in Wichita, Kansas, and he used to be my congressman, Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State under the Trump administration, probably one of the smartest guys in politics. Let's just be honest. You may not agree with him on everything, but he's an extremely intelligent individual. If you've ever listened to him speak, he is formerly from the military. He runs things like the military. He is extremely smart. He graduated at the top of his classes in university and in military school and did all his things. He's a brilliant individual. Does not have the personality to run for president, because before, a couple years ago, going into this 2024 election, he teased a potential presidential run. And I love the guy. I'm good friends with him. I haven't talked to him in a while, but I'm good friends with him. At least friends, acquaintances. We know each other because, being the radio host in this area, I've interviewed him many, many times. Nonetheless, does not have the character or the personality to run for office. A presidential race, unfortunately, is you have to have the sexiness. Let's just be honest. You have to have that Barack Obama swag where you can kick your feet up on the White House desk and smoke a cigarette and sit there and fist bump people. And that, in today's times, is what constitutes a good presidential candidate. It's not, but that's what appeals to people in the general public who don't pay attention to politics. Which leads to a few different issues that I want to get to. But before we do, looking at some of these things going on this weekend, we have the Biden administration on the campaign trail, which I don't know if you're aware of this. I was not aware of this myself, but apparently there is a Greek Independence Day that happened back on March 25th. And the Greek community, I don't know how much of the Greek community there actually is across the nation, but there's apparently a substantial amount of Greek community that Joe Biden's trying to win over. And he spoke there just a week or so ago. And just like all the other times, he talked about how influential he is within that particular community.
I got into Wilmington, and one of the please move all that back, by the way. One of the things that I should start by saying, the only reason I'm able to stand here is because of the Greek community. That's not hyperbole. That's where I acquired a nickname I'm very proud of. I am Joe Bidenopoulos.
Joe Biden. That audio, by the way, from Fox News. Joe Bidenopoulos. That's what we're going to call him now. Joe, have you ever heard of that one, Chad? What about you there, Trumpy Bear? Yeah. Bidenopoulos. Joe Bidenopoulos. That's what he is now. He's Joe Bidenopoulos. I don't know where he gets that one, but because apparently he's part of the Greek community, just like he's been part of the Hispanic community, just like he's part of the Puerto Rican community, just like he's part of the Asian community, just like he's part of the Irish community, just like he's part of the fill-in-the-blank community for every demographic. He is part of their community, and they just love him to death as Uncle Joe, right? That's the portrayal that we're getting on the campaign trail right now. He's lost his awesome coolness. If you remember back in the first election in 2020, they pawned him off as the cool guy. He was wearing the aviators. He was just kind of hanging out. You know, he was the cool dude. He was the lovey grandpa. Now he was an idiot, and he would say some ridiculous stuff that we heard even back when he was vice president with Barack Obama, but people liked him because he was cool, and they liked him because he wasn't Donald Trump. So there was that as well. But they're trying to keep that cool hipster thing going for Joe Biden, and I don't know that it's necessarily working. I don't know that it's actually beneficial, but he's part of the Greek community now as well. The focus right now is all money, money, money. Last week, or at least in the last week or so, he had a major fundraiser in New York with Barack Obama and with Bill Clinton, the three presidents hanging out on the Democrat side, raking in near $25 million in a single night for a benefit. And it does help him, obviously, with the fundraising that's going on, according to the NPR reports right now, shows that the Biden administration and the DNC combined raked in near $90 million for the month of March alone, putting Biden's reelection efforts at the end of the month sitting at $192 million on hand. It's a lot of money. Now, obviously, that was a couple weeks ago for the end of March, so he's probably spent some, but he's raking in a decent amount. And the problem has been the Republican Party raking in decent amounts of money. In fact, they raised near $26 million, I guess, in that single night with the Barack Obama and Bill Clinton and Joe Biden and Radio Music Hall thing. And I believe that Stephen Colbert, was there emceeing the event as well. On the flip side, on the Donald Trump Republican side, the Republican National Committee raised for the month of March near $66 million, which isn't bad because apparently it was relatively down until this last month when the transition happened with the RNC and Laura Trump ended up taking reins as the co-chair and saw one of the best months that they have in a very long time. So Donald Trump himself is doing well with money, but the RNC has been struggling. Until now, things are starting to turn around. Laura Trump comes in, is the co-chair. Again, she's not running it, but she's the co-chair with the Trump name, waltzing in, and $66 million roll in for the month of March. Tonight, this is being Saturday night, this weekend, the Trump administration having another benefit down in Florida and supposed to rake in near $50 million in a single night with some major donors under Donald Trump. So the Trump machine is now in full force. And the money is beginning to rake in left and right. What it's going to come down to is it's going to come down to exposure in the battle between these for the quote-unquote average common folk. What do you mean by that? What I mean by that is that we already essentially know who's going to vote for Republicans with Donald Trump and who's essentially going to vote for Democrats with Joe Biden. We already know that there's an anti-Trump movement in the nation. What we don't know is where the middle is going to go. And obviously there's a conversation about third-party candidates and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and some of these other guys. But there is a movement brewing right now about how we're going to count up the votes in the general election for 2024. And I talked a little bit about this during the week, but this is outside of ESG, which I think is probably one of the most important issues. The Electoral College system is one of the most underrated, most underappreciated, most important aspects of our entire nation that we can hold on to. And we have to remember that. And this is coming from a millennial at 35 years old that is not on board with this national popular vote movement that we're seeing across the nation. There are state after state after state, predominantly Democrat blue states, that have jumped on board with this national popular vote. And if you paid attention to what happened earlier this week in the state of Nebraska,
it's your week in review.
On Wednesday night, the state legislature in the state of Nebraska ended up voting on a potential change to their electoral college process to where it would be a winner take all. Now, for those that don't know and may not be familiar with this process, I'm going to try and put it in the best terms I can in the amount of time that we have on this program, because it can get very complicated very quickly. But the best summation is that electoral college votes are votes based on the population of a state. And after the popular vote comes in for the presidential race, the electoral college, depending on how you vote for these individuals or how they're chosen in your individual state, casts a vote by the electoral college to cast a vote for one candidate or the other. And then that's how a president wins, not by popular vote. That may be triggering for some. That may be news to some. But we do not base our presidential campaigns and presidential races off a popular vote. If we did, there would be five cities in the nation that would choose the president every year, and we would never have a Republican ever again. Because obviously large cities are where progressives like to unite. They like to hoard. They like to be the ants that just pile into the ant pile. And that is where they coexist. And then the conservative Republicans predominantly are on the outskirts of towns or in rural communities. And if you look at an electoral map based on where people vote, you see little pockets of blue and the rest of the nation's covered in red. But yet those pockets of blue would be able to decide every presidential race from here on out. And a Democrat would always win. We would never see a Republican again. So don't be very wary, especially younger voters. I know that you're listening because we're on social media. I'm with you. I'm part of you. I am you with you with this young generation. Be very skeptical and run far as away as you possibly can from this national popular vote mindset of, oh, popular vote. We don't live in a democracy. We don't live in a simple majority rules votes voting process. We live in a constitutional republic, and we have to remember that. Now, that being said, most states, there's like two states, Nebraska and I want to say Maine, that actually split their electoral college votes on that night. And Nebraska particularly, which is weird that we're talking about Nebraska, because Nebraska has five electoral college votes, five. And those get split up, which usually goes 4-1, because the Omaha, Nebraska area, which is roughly 500,000 people or 450,000 people, which is roughly 25% of the entire state population, not a very big state and not a very big town. But overall, it's one electoral college vote there, and that usually goes blue while the other four go red. And the movement by Republicans, surprisingly, were actually on board to try and change that to do a winner-take-all and have all five of the electoral college votes go to the popular winner, which would be a Republican, which means all five would go to Donald Trump. Democrats losing their minds over that issue. Now, it didn't go anywhere. Only eight people voted for it in their legislature, 8-36 in their procedural vote. So it didn't go anywhere. And I got to admit, even though this is not necessarily popular from the Republican side, I'm glad it didn't go anywhere. And I'll explain why when we come back. And for the fact that Democrats fought against it so badly shows their hypocritical side as well, which we'll explain when we come back. It's the weekend edition of The Voice of Reason. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. It's your Patriot on the Prairie. This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Darn right it is. Welcome back into it. Your Patriot on the Prairie, your home for common sense, reason, and rationale. That's just what we do here on the show each and every day. It's The Voice of Reason. Welcome aboard. So we have the state of Nebraska. The national attention earlier this week with the vote on Wednesday that happened on Nebraska, the five electoral college votes, Republicans wanting to do a winner take all, which I understand the argument there. I mean, every other state except for like Maine does a winner takes all. There's only a few of them in the general election that actually split their electoral college votes, but they want to do a winner take all for that one singular vote that comes out of Omaha, Nebraska, where the 25% of the population is. And they say they don't want to be absorbed into what the rest of the state does. We want to be our own wicked, wild, independent, free thinkers here in the state of Nebraska, in that Omaha area. We want that one vote to go blue, which will predominantly go to Joe Biden. Now, the Biden administration, the Democrats, they're the ones fighting this tooth and nail. And I find that kind of hypocritical. I find that kind of the two-timing hypocritical jerks that the Democrat Party is. Andy, why? Well, these are the same ones that are pushing for a national popular vote. The progressive liberals that are pushing for a national popular vote to eliminate the Electoral College. We don't understand it. We make people not understand it by not educating them about it. We don't understand trying to defend the rural communities and smaller populations across the nation. We don't really care. We want those four or five or six different cities across the nation, not states, cities across the nation, to have enough population to override everyone else's votes in the nation and have them choose the presidency. Sorry, too bad. That's popular vote. That's just what the people want. That's what the majority of the people want in the nation. You just have to suck it up and go along with it. So that party are the ones that are fighting to keep the Electoral College votes broken apart in the state of Nebraska. I find that kind of interesting and more than likely a little bit hypocritical. On the same end, I understand why Republicans were wanting to do it, not because Donald Trump needs that one vote to actually win. In fact, most of the Democrats in the Biden administration are openly admitting that they're losing a lot of the swing states, and Nebraska is becoming a swing state, and they're desperate to cling on to that one vote because that could be a make or break. That puts into perspective, by the way, how close this election is going to be with the make or break of a one singular electoral college vote that could make or break the election for Joe Biden. So they are desperate to hang on to it. And obviously it didn't go anywhere because only eight people voted for it in the legislature in the state of Nebraska. But I understand why Republicans did it to be more uniform with what other states do. But I disagree with it. And the reason I disagree with it is because we're not trying to make a winner take all here. And in fact, we need to go the opposite direction. Now, I have been, and I don't like to toot my own horn or praise myself a whole lot, but I am going to take credit for this because I have not heard a single other pundit in the nation ever in my tenure of talking politics on the radio, never heard someone talk about doing this issue. And we're working behind the scenes. I can't announce it much, but we are working hard behind the scenes to understand the process better on how to do this. But what we need to do is not go national popular vote, not go universal popular vote at states. We need to go the opposite direction and bring electoral college votes and electoral college process to a statewide level in every state. We need to do it for, in your local state, fill in the blank, governor's races, attorney general's races, Secretary of State's races, U.S. Senate races. We need to have an electoral college process set up at your state level to start protecting rural communities. Because right now we have the major cities in every state that are essentially dominating politics. My prime example is the state of Kansas. We have 105 counties in the state of Kansas. Our Democrat governor won by winning seven counties. Seven counties out of 105. Now tell me how that is proper representation of the state when we have a supermajority of Republican legislators because based on district, but she can win a statewide race based on seven counties. There's something wrong with that. It's time for an electoral college conversation at a state level, and we're the only ones talking about that. And we got a lot of big information coming out about it on what we're doing behind the scenes to make that actually happen. Lots more coming up about that, plus MK Sweeney when we come back around the corner for the home stretch here of The Voice of Reason. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Reason Meets Radio. This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Darn right it is. Welcome back into it. Reason, Common Sense, Rationale. That's just what we do here on this program. So great to have you on the home stretch here, last half hour of the program. Man, it flies right on by. We got so much more to talk about and so little time to do it. Again, I can't talk much more about what we're working on here on the show, but we have a movement brewing, if you know what I mean. And we're going to be starting something here very soon once we kind of figure out how to structure it, how to organize it, and then we can push for this. Obviously, every radio show has their movement behind it with what they like to focus on. We're going to be focusing on the electoral and legislative process on this because we need to stop a national popular vote. Got to stop it. That's just absolutely ridiculous. We have to enforce the Electoral College. We have to educate people on the Electoral College, and we have to take it a step deeper now and go to the next one. So I'll have some more information on that, but it's fascinating of how close this election could potentially be and how hypocritical and twisted the progressives are by wanting to not do a winner take all in Nebraska, but yet advocate for a national popular vote, thinking that we should just absorb whatever cities won in this nation. I find that kind of interesting. Let's shift gears a little bit here. Did you hear, by the way, Chad, and oh, by the way, executive producer Trumpy Bear, who's now in studio with us as well, did you hear? Chad, jump on here real quickly, just real for a quick moment. Do you have a college basketball bracket that you fill out every year for the March Madness tournament?
No, I do not.
You don't? Interesting. Okay. Now, I don't follow basketball. I don't know anything about basketball, but I fill out a bracket because I work at a cluster of radio stations that has a sports talk. And all the way up until the Final Four, I was third place in our company's bracket challenge. Third place. I don't know anything about these basketball games at all, or teams or anything. I base it off of the color of the jersey and the coolness of the mascot is what I do. And I was leading in the third, or at least in the third place position for our bracket challenge all the way up until the Final Four happening this weekend. But my teams that were going into the Final Four, I had one left, and I know that they're not going to do anything. So mine's busted. Championship, for those that do pay attention to it, by the way, is on Monday for the championship game in the end of basketball college season. But did you know? Did you know, breaking news from Vice President Kamala Harris, that women's basketball, which, by the way, the championship's on Sunday for those that pay attention to women's college basketball, that college basketball brackets for women didn't start until 2022?
Do you know, okay, a bit of a history lesson. Do you know that women were not, the women's teams were not allowed to have brackets until 2022? Think about that, and what that, talk about progress, you know, better late than never, but progress, and what that has done. Because of course, when, you know, I had a bracket, it's not broken completely, but I won't talk about my bracket. But you know what, just how we love March Madness, and even just now allowing the women to have brackets, and what that does to encourage people to talk more about the women's teams, to watch them. Now they're being covered. You know, and this is the reality. People used to say, oh, women's sports, who's interested? Well, if you can't see it, you won't be. But when you see it, you realize, oh.
All the progress the Biden administration's done. 2022, the first women's bracket. Did you know that? No. Yeah, 1982, like you said, Chad, 1982 was when the first women's bracket actually came on board as part of the women's tournament. But by golly, the Biden administration breaking ground every day. Now, that consists, here's the thing, and I think she could be right, and here's what I mean. That depends on what you would define as a woman. Ah, see, now it gets a little bit deeper. If you change the definition of what a woman is, then they could have their own bracket in the college basketball tournament. To talk about some of that and more,
let's go to the Hoosier Media Hotline.
Let's get to our guest here. Maybe she's got some insight on what college basketball brackets for women look like, since apparently they didn't happen until 2 years ago. She is the author of the book, The Magi of Miriam, The Boy Who Saved the Kingdom. We've had her on the weekday program. Now excited to have her on the national weekend show as well. Happy to have on MK Sweeney. MK, how are you, my friend?
Andy, I'm great. Thanks for having me on your show. It's good to be here.
Yeah, so excited to have you on. Did you know that you couldn't fill out a women's college basketball bracket until just 2 years ago? I didn't know that.
I didn't know that, but I also find your comment about, you know, we have a new type of women's team potentially is on point. It's much taller.
Yeah, it's much taller, and it goes a lot quicker paced, I guess, than the regular. You had the men's, you had the women's, and then you have the ultra women's basketball tournament now, I guess. That's
right.
What we're going to do.
Yeah. It's crazy. I do think that sports is a line for a lot of people on this particular issue. I mean, you just, because the women's game would be completely dissipated and gone if you started to allow transgender onto the teams. And college recruiting would look very different for women's teams, too, for sure.
Yeah, that is very true. A lot of people have actually drawn that line. They don't care about people's beliefs. They don't care about people's personal choices. Whatever. People can live their life however they want to. And most people have taken that approach in some aspect. But most draw that line when we see men start competing with women and it really started with like the UFC where guys were going into the women's UFC and literally cracking the skulls of women because they were hitting so hard, women fighters are brutal. I love watching them in the UFC, but it's on a completely different level and there's different aspects here. MK, how in the world did we get to this point to where we find that even somewhat acceptable and we even have to have a conversation about it?
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for you there, Andy. I mean, it really just does defy logic that this is, you know, a point where our society has come. But it is kind of like a barometer on how much you can brainwash people. I would say one thing, because there have been all these different transgender, gender dysphoria topics percolating around the country over the past number of months. And one thing that does seem to be on point with all of them is it is not really about the people who suffer from this gender dysphoria, the actual psychiatric disorder. It's very much more about conditioning the rest of us and encouraging kids and others to emulate this psychiatric disorder. And that's on a macro level, the really, really troubling aspect to all of this.
Yeah, it really is. Let's focus on the children for just a moment, because like you said, there is a small population. There's a small percentage of the population that truly has a gender dysphoria issue. They're confused about who they are. They don't know what's going on. They feel very out of place. They feel very out of touch. What percentage of the population is that actually? And then I guess now we're starting to see apparently that they're a minority group in society. So now that's all of a sudden cool and hip and sexy and retro. So now everybody wants to become part of it. In fact, Gen Z, the generation behind me, says that near 17% or 20% of the population actually identifies as part of the LGBTQ community and actually either is participating in or supports this transgender movement, which I find pretty radical when you see people actually having this issue, like less than 1%.
Yeah, so I haven't heard the 17% quoted before. I'd be curious to see what study. But I mean, the studies that are populating now are more just like trends. Actual numbers for gender dysphoria that I had seen and most frequently cite are from the American Psychiatric Association, which is most commonly in the medical industry, the touch point. And per their read, it's 5 to 12 men in 100,000 and 3 to 4 women in 100,000. So the numbers statistically that you're talking about, if you go by that particular study, which is the only one that I've seen that actually has credence, is significantly less than 1%. So like 99.9% of people, or I think it might be 99.98%, do not have this true gender dysphoria. But I think what you're seeing is it is being pushed at all of these kids at a point where they're confused. I mean, you look at teenagers and adolescents, and I don't know a lot of adolescents. If you were to ask them, hey, are you happy with the status quo? If they're going to be like, yeah, life is great right now, because they're at a very hormonally charged time in their lives. And, you know, a lot of them are malcontents, and it's natural. I mean, their hormones are raging. The social scene in high schools, I don't know if you remember, Andy, but it was tough. I mean, you know, your friend situations and things like that and academics, and you don't have a lot of control and your frontal lobe isn't closed. And there's a lot of confusing aspects to being a kid. And then you throw this, well, do you think you might be, you know, happier if you're the other sex? And yeah. I mean, you want to see a head like turn, you know, you're like, why not try that? You know, I'm not happy with the status quo, so why don't you try being a woman? You know, it's just a real bizarre thing. And it also just this whole idea that you can just switch sexes, that we're just all these androgynous beings, is so bizarre. And then a lot of people, you know, if you believe in God, you start to get into this area where you're like, because gender ideology is the idea that you're put in the wrong body. So then you get to the thought, well, if God created you, did he make a mistake? So then you get to the attack on God. So there's any number of different ways and facets that you can kind of look at this particular messaging, none of which is particularly good. And it's not actually, it doesn't seem to be all that helpful for the actual individuals that suffer from this, because these gender transitioning surgeries and things like that, I mean, the latest study that I had seen out of California was that the risk of suicide for these individuals that are getting vaginoplasties actually doubles. So I think that most proponents of the transgender push, they go under the guise of preventing teenage suicides, but there were never any numbers to support that. And now there's been a study, you know, and I personally haven't looked at all of the material data from the study, but this study indicates that if you undergo the surgeries, you're actually putting yourself in a position worse psychiatrically than you were before. So yeah. The crux of it is, for the rest of us, the 99.9% of us, what is happening here?
Why are we going to?
And then you talk about sports, and you're like, all these women who have trained and worked to be good in their sport, whatever that is, lacrosse, basketball, whatever.
It's taken it to another level for sure. We got to take a break here. Hold on the line. It's MK Sweeney, the Magi of Merriam, which you can find the book on Amazon. You can also find the book on the website at magiofmerriam.com. I want to continue this when we come back, because everything you just mentioned, is it done intentional to attack the youth? We'll do that when we come back.
This
stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. America's safe space for common sense. This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
So I was actually wrong with my stat about the Gen Z supporting the LGBTQ. It's actually higher than 17 to 20% that I had said. According to NBC News, I found this. This was as of the end of January this year. And 30% of Gen Z adults identify, not just support, but identify as LGBTQ. More than one in four Gen Z adults in the U.S., according to the NBC report, identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or queer, dwarfing the percentage of LGBTQ from previous generations. 30%. So going back to what our guest MK Sweeney just mentioned in the last segment, that 0.02% actually have gender dysphoria in society, we now have 30% of an entire generation that says that they identify as one of these part of the LGBTQ movement. So that begs the question. And by the way, we're talking with MK Sweeney, author of the book, The Magi of Merriam. You can find the book on Amazon and on the website at magiofmerriam.com. But that begs the question then, is this a targeted approach? And like you said, when we're in, let's say, middle school, early high school time, we're going through our hormonal changes, we're going through the big time, the big hormonal changes and the growings up of our ourselves at that time, and everything's confusing and we're angry and we don't know what's going on and we're breaking out, we're having a hard time, and we just don't know what the heck's happening with our lives. When that's happening, then someone's coming in and just whispering in our ear, do you really feel like you are who you are? Shouldn't you be somebody else? It almost seems like, MK, that this is a targeted attack of our youth of the next generation, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems that way, at least to confuse them further for whatever reason. I would say that the transgender, so the gender dysphoria, is probably already a much smaller percentage than, say, the gay, lesbian, that kind of segment of the population. But the 30%. So if you go under the guise that it's true biology, which most individuals who actually suffer from these things, they would strongly support that it's biology. So how can you have that significant of a jump over time, 30%?
Right.
I mean, our biology has not changed.
Exactly. So, and even when it comes to gay and lesbian mindset, I want to say that the average percentage of the population of humanity in any generation is anywhere between 2 to 4%. Maybe it's jumped up to like 6% at some point, but it's always been in single digits. To say that 30% of an entire generation identifies, not just supports it, but identifies as this, like you said, that's a massive jump. Why would be the next question?
Yeah, and so I think it's trending. I mean, it's being, you know, to a certain degree taught in schools. And we have three kids, my husband and I, and our 7-year-old, we send them to Catholic school. Our 7-year-old, who's a second grader, came home and asked me if she's a lesbian. And she doesn't even know what a lesbian is.
Wow.
I said,
so someone put that
Mary,
in her head.
I know. Yeah, I don't know, but you don't have to worry about it now. I know that. I mean, she's 7 years old. She hasn't gone through puberty or anything like this. So it's just part of the vernacular now in schools and with kids. And I think that that exposure, I mean, obviously people are going to identify with it more only because it's just more common in the vernacular. It doesn't mean that they actually have the biology and that they fall within that percentage that maintains, I would suggest, pretty level with us. You know, gender dysphoria is an actual thing. These people think that they're trapped in the wrong body, and it's very sad. It is in such a very, very, very small percentage of our population. And so, you know, to blow it up like this, I think it's confusion. I mean, mass chaos and maybe to turn each other, you know, ourselves against each other. The tactic, I don't really know the underlying purpose of all this, Andy. It's really difficult to figure out, is this just an attack on God and trying to take Christianity down in the country? Like, what is the underlying purpose? And I haven't really seen any in-depth analysis of this particular trend in our society. I don't know, maybe you have.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, you're right. There's numerous different factors, I think, to continue that divide with parents and children, to where the children don't feel comfortable coming to the parents and talking to them about it, so they isolate them, which means they can control them. There is that aspect of God, because you're right. If they start questioning, did God make a mistake? Obviously, God doesn't make a mistake, and therefore them questioning that means that they're now questioning the supreme being of the universe, regardless however people feel about that. So it is an attack on the basic fundamental principles of this nation, and they're doing it with the open-mindedness of the youth of America. Go and check it out, a Christian fantasy series specifically for adolescents and teens, hopefully to help them through some of these troubling questions that they have. It is The Magi of Merriam, The Boy Who Saved the Kingdom. Find it on Amazon and the website magiofmerriam.com. MK, so good to have you on the program again. I love chatting with you. We got to do it again real soon, my friend.
Thank you so much. Take care. Have a good weekend.
You as well. Always a pleasure. We're done, man. It flies right on by. Oh, how the time goes. We'll do it again next week. And until then, find us on our website, HoosierReason.com. Be your own voice of reason. It's time for you to speak up, speak out, speak loud, speak proud, speak the truth, and always speak some reason. This is The Voice of Reason. I'm Andy Hoosier. We'll see you on the radio. Bye.